Welcome to the May IASB podcast, where we bring you the latest insights from our board meetings. I am Neely Shaw, the Executive Technical Director at the IASB, and this month we have a little surprise for you. Many of our long-term listeners, you're probably used to the fact that I'm joined by Andreas Barco and Linda Mazan-Hutter, our Chair and Vice Chair of the IASB. But starting this month, we're shaking things up a little bit. And going forward, each podcast will feature one of our IASB members alongside either Andreas or Linda. And this will be continuing on a rotating basis. So this month, I am joined by Linda and Nick Anderson, one of our IASB members. So welcome, both of you, but especially Nick. I don't know if you drew the short straw, being our first.
Oh, no, the victim. Long straw.
Yes.
Long straw.
I'm the long straw.
We're not.
First
It'll
one.
It'll be fun. So we have just finished the May 2024 board meeting where we discussed six projects. In this episode, we'll be discussing two of those projects, financial instruments with characteristics of equity, better known as FICE, and our post-implementation review of the impairment requirements in IFRS 9. And then we'll wrap up today's episode by sharing some details about recent publications and some upcoming publications. So let's start out with FICE. Linda, can you give us a little bit of background on that?
Oh, I'm happy to do that, Neely, a project I followed for quite some time. So over the years, we've heard from our stakeholders that while IAS 32 works quite well for most financial instruments, there are challenges with the classification of certain complex financial instruments as either financial liabilities or equity. So the IASB added the FICE project to its work plan to improve the information that companies provide in their financial statements about financial instruments they have issued and to address challenges with applying IAS 32 financial instruments presentation. This exposure draft was published in late 2023, proposing changes to improve how companies report on financial instruments with characteristics of equity, and it focused on clarifying the underlying classification principles in IAS 32 to help companies distinguish between financial liabilities and equity, improving the disclosure requirements to further explain complexities around instruments that have both financial equity and liability characteristics, and including presentation requirements for amounts attributable to ordinary shareholders separately from amounts attributable to other holders of equity instruments. The comment period on the ED closed in March this year, and at the May board meeting, the staff presented a high-level summary of the feedback and key themes emerging from the 137 comment letters received and also from the investor outreach activities. We didn't make any decisions this month. We simply listened to this high-level summary.
Thanks, Linda. That ED generated quite a bit of feedback. So, Nick, can I turn things over to you to tell us what our stakeholders told us during this consultation?
Of course. So the feedback from stakeholders acknowledged several matters. The challenge in distinguishing between financial liabilities and equity and the need for further guidance. Generally, support for the efforts by the IASB, including both the intent and the objective of the proposed amendments. There was agreement with the approach to clarify some classifications in IAS 32, and that would reduce diversity in practice, addressing known issues, and support for the addition of presentation and disclosure requirements to improve the understandability and comparability for investors. Now, although stakeholders agreed with most aspects, there was also disagreement on some proposals in the exposure draft. Stakeholders raised concerns about the impact on specific instruments issued in some jurisdictions or the potential for new interpretation issues to arise. And some stakeholders also requested additional guidance and examples on how to apply the principles in practice. From the very beginning, this project wasn't meant to be a fundamental rewrite of the requirements in IAS 32. Many of our listeners will recall such an approach was explored a few years ago. The intent was to limit the changes to classification outcomes to those in which sufficient evidence exists that such a change would provide useful information. So the main objective of the project is to resolve practice questions that stakeholders have told us for many years that they are having and where diversity in practice currently exists. Now, it's therefore natural that whenever we clarify underlying principles, there will be changes involved for some entities, and that might require to change the classification of some of their instruments. For next steps, the staff will bring detailed comment letter analysis, and we'll discuss those at future ISB meetings. We'll re-deliberate the proposals, and we'll end up making some decisions.
Great. Thanks so much, Nick. So stay tuned, listeners. We'll be talking about this project for many months to come. So let's switch gears and move on to the second project we mentioned that we would talk about today, and that is the post-implementation review of the impairment requirements in IFRS 9. Now, as a reminder, a post-implementation review is not a standard-setting project, but it could lead to standard-setting if the board was presented with evidence that the standard is not working as intended, or there are specific priority questions about the application of the standard. So, Nick, can we go back to you, and can you give our listeners a quick timeline on the project?
Sure. So, project history. The ISB began the post-implementation review of IFRS 9 financial instruments, or the impairment requirements, in the second half of 2022. In May of 2023, we published the request for information that sought stakeholders' views on the impairment requirements and the related disclosures. And the comment period for that request for information closed in September of 2023. From February of the current year, we began our deliberations by considering responses to the request for information, along with information we gathered through our consultative groups and our research activities. And that was to determine whether further action is needed on any of the matters identified. I have to say, overall, the feedback we've received through the post-implementation review has been largely positive.
Thanks, Nick. So, Linda, can I turn things over to you to talk about what happened at the May meeting?
Sure, happy to do that, Neely. So at that May meeting, we discussed topics remaining to wrap up the PIR of the impairment requirements in IFRS 9. So specifically, we discussed an academic research report from Lancaster University examining the application of credit risk disclosure requirements in IFRS 7. We looked at an analysis of the PIR feedback about credit risk disclosures. We looked at an analysis of the PIR feedback around some other matters, some miscellaneous matters, and a summary of the ISB's response to the PIR feedback and our next steps. So, the ISB agreed with the staff recommendations to add a project to the research pipeline that would explore making targeted improvements to the credit risk disclosure requirements in IFRS 7. The ISB members agreed that sufficient work has been completed to conclude the PIR and for the staff to prepare the project summary and feedback statement. So, the project summary would note the following. One, no fatal flaws were identified, but there are some areas for improvement were mentioned. As I've already mentioned, we would do a standard setting project to improve credit risk disclosures. As part of a project we plan to start soon on amortized cost measurement, the ISB, which we expect to start in Q3, we will consider matters that arise from applying the impairment requirements in IFRS 9 with the requirements for modification, derecognition, and write-off of financial assets. For other topics that were raised to us, we decided that there isn't sufficient evidence of a need to take action at this time. But as always, we'll continue to monitor. We expect to publish the project summary and feedback statement in July 2024 once the Due Process Oversight Committee is satisfied that the ISB has completed the review satisfactorily.
Thanks, Linda. And our Due Process Oversight Committee plans to discuss this review at its June meeting in a few weeks. That will be a public meeting, so also stay tuned for that. So now let's go to publications that we have completed and in a few publications that are coming through in the next few weeks. So first, the final amendments to the classification and measurement requirements for financial instruments in IFRS 9 will be out at the end of May. These amendments, as you may be aware, respond to the feedback that we heard from the 2022 post-implementation review of the classification and measurement requirements in IFRS 9. These amendments will address the diversity in accounting practice. In addition, everyone is probably aware that we have had some exciting times recently with two new accounting standards issued, IFRS 18 and IFRS 19. So Nick and Linda, can I turn things over to you to give a short summary of each of these? And Nick, maybe if we could start with you and IFRS 18?
Yes, IFRS 18 is the Presentation Disclosure in Financial Statement Standard. It will provide investors with more transparent and more comparable information about companies' financial performance. The new standard will affect all companies, and we are very much encouraging everyone to think about starting their implementation efforts early.
Absolutely. So it has an effective date of January 1st, 2027, but certainly early application is most welcome. And then secondly, Linda, IFRS 19
is for subsidiaries without public accountability. So think about a big global company that has a whole bunch of subsidiaries that need to do separate financial statements. Keep that in your mind. We hope that if it's used well, this will reduce costs in the financial reporting ecosystem, especially for the companies preparing those separate financial statements. It should simplify the reporting and reduce the costs of preparing subsidiary financial statements because of the reduced disclosures. And we think these reduced disclosures in IFRS 19 are better suited to the needs of the users of their financial statements. And so we're pretty excited about IFRS 19.
Yeah. Thanks, Linda. So to support both of these standards, we will be publishing additional materials, and I encourage our listeners to visit our website and stay updated on the latest developments. We also have one more publication that I wanted to flag for you, and that is our exposure draft on narrow scope amendments for renewable electricity contracts. We've discussed this in many previous podcasts, but just as a reminder, as more and more companies transition to renewable energy sources, we want to make sure that our accounting standards keep pace and provide investors with useful information. The comment period is open until the 7th of August, so we do hope to hear from you. In addition, we also wanted to flag that the IFRS Foundation Conference is being held on the 24th and 25th of June in London. The agenda for this conference and registration details are also on our website, and it's looking to be a very exciting conference. Again, similar to last year, it'll feature both the IASB and ISSB, and both boards will be sharing updates on the work that each board is doing, as well as the connectivity between the two boards. And then last but not least, Nick is our special guest this month. We have a surprise question for you, because like I said, you are a victim and you are in the hot seat here. That question, and we invite our listeners to ask us any questions that they might have on their minds. So the question for this month is, Nick, what is your favorite accounting standard?
That's an easy question. Thank you, Nilly. I'm going to have to say IFRS 18. When my very first board meeting in September 2017, we discussed some of those proposals then. I believe what we've ended up with will support companies portray their story to the market, and it will allow investors to operate in a more effective and a more efficient manner in terms of making their capital allocation decisions. I will also confess I do have a soft spot for IFRS 17, which is completely different, but that's another one which I'd also nominate.
Okay, well, we'll forgive you for picking two. Although I should have guessed you were going to say IFRS 18. I think the team may have bribed you a little bit in the background too. So, listeners, as always, you are welcome to ask our board members any questions that are on your mind. If you would like to submit questions, please do so by sending them to communications@ifrs.org. We hope to hear from you. Thank you for joining us on this episode, and we'll be back again next month for the next episode. Thank you.